Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, Text Number 20. Karmanaiva hi samsedhim astita janakadaya loko sangraham evapi sampashan kartum arhasi karmana by work eva even he certainly samsidim imperfection astita situated janaka adaya janaka and other kings loka sangraham the people in general eva api also sampashan considering kartum to act arhasi you deserve. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Purport. Kings like Janaka were all self-realized souls. Consequently, they had no obligation to perform the prescribed duties in the Vedas. Nonetheless, they perform all prescribed activities just to set example for people in general. Janaka was the father of Sita and the father-in-law of Lord Shri Ram. Being a great devotee of the Lord, he was transcendentally situated. But because he was the king of Mathila, a subdivision of the Bihar province in India, he had to teach his subjects how to perform prescribed duties. Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal friend, had no need to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, but they fought to teach people in general that violence is also necessary in a situation where good arguments fail. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, every effort was made to avoid the war, but even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the other party was determined to fight. So, for such a right cause, there is a necessity for fighting. Although one who is situated in Krishna consciousness may not have any interest in the world, he still works to teach the people how to live and how to act. Experienced persons in Krishna consciousness can act in such a way that others will follow, and this is explained in the following verse. Karmanaiva hi samsidim astita janakaraya loko sangraham evapi sampashan kartum arhasi. Kings, such as Janaka, attain perfection solely by performance prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. So there are two classes of devotees. One is called Sakama devotees, and the other is called Akama devotees. So Sakama devotees are those who have material desires. And Krishna divides them into Chatur Vida Bhajante Mam, Jana Sukritina Arjuna, Arta Jignasya Artarati, Jnani Chara Bharatar Shiva. Four kinds of pious people approach Krishna. And these are not born, and they have to remain in these designations, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahman. Their qualities, Krishna says, they're born of the qualities. Of course, in this age, everyone is born Shudra, because there's no reformatory process which would enable the parents to have the proper consciousness at the time of conception. Therefore, Janmana Jayate Shudra. Everyone is born in the Bali concept of life. Bali concept of life means ignorance, because we're actually not this body. So therefore, if one is identifying oneself with the body, gross or subtle, there must be a certain quality of ignorance in one's consciousness. Then, by education, janmana jayate shudra samskara bhavat dvija. By samskara, by doing some activity which changes the consciousness, one may realize that there's some higher purpose in life other than sense gratification. So then one becomes a twice-born dvija. There are two living entities who are twice-born. One is the bird, who's first born from a shell and then is twice born again. So birds are also born again. And then the one who's twice born by Vedic reformatory processes and realizes that there's something more than material existence, so that's also a kind of being born again into spiritual life. Now, generally speaking, if one is a Shudra, one can also be a Muda. In other words, everyone in ignorance is not necessarily a Shudra, they can also be a Muda. Muda means that they believe that there's nothing beyond sense gratification. A Shudra means that they have one good quality of being submissive to the higher classes of men. Muda aren't submissive to anyone. They think everyone owes them everything. But if one is a Muda, he can also be trained up to become a Shudra. If he understands that there's a higher purpose of life other than just sense gratification. Otherwise, if one is born, if one remains a Muda, one is sure to transmigrate into the lower species of life. Tanaham dvishita kuran samsreshu naradamam. Shi pramyastra asubam asrishveva yonishu. Tanaham dvishita kuran samsreshu naradamam. Shipam yejastram ashubam ashriveva yonishu. So those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among mankind, I perpetually cast them into the lower species of life. Gaining repeated birth among such species, they can never obtain me unless they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. Trividam narakasyedam dwaram nashitam atmanaha kama krodha ta lovas tasma etam trayam chajet. There are three gates leading to this hell, lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should become free from them because they lead to the degradation of the self. And as Krishna goes on to explain, everyone has to follow Shastra. In other words, Shastra is our means of understanding what Krishna wants us to do, and we're obliged to utilize Krishna's energies in his service, or else we'll be forced to act according to lust, anger, and greed, which leads to illusion. Now we're already in illusion. We've already forgotten who we are. We don't really see things clearly, but we can make it a lot worse. So by whatever realizations we have, by whatever spiritual influence we're under, we have the power to avoid gross and subtle sinful activities. So that will at least prevent us from becoming degraded in our next lifetime into some lower species of life. But on the other hand, one can also elevate oneself if one understands what one's duty is. Now, for the Shudra, his duty is to serve the higher castes. And all the higher castes, they're not meant just to accept service. Everyone is a servant. Just a question who you understand, how clear it is that we're servants of Krishna. For the Brahmins, it's completely 100% clear that they're servants of Krishna, especially the Brahmin Vaishnavas. For the Kshatriyas, it's not so clear, but it's clear that they should be serving the Brahmin Vaishnavas. And for the Vaishyas, it's even less clear, but they also have faith that they have to cooperate with the Kshatriyas for sacrifice under the guidance of the Brahmin Vaishnavas. It's ultimately sacrifice for Vishnu. And for the Shudras, it's even less clear. Therefore, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, The four kinds of pious people who approach Krishna belong to these four classes. The neophyte devotees, they're considered Kanishta Adhikaris or neophyte. So neophyte goes all the way from someone like Gajendra, who is suffering, to Dhruva Maharaj, who wanted material gain, to the sages of Naimisharanya, who were curious, to the four Kumaras, who were Brahmins and were seeking for liberation. So, Kanishta Adhikara is not all on one level. There is the Gyani Kanishta and there is the Karmi Kanishta. And the Gyani Kanishta goes all the way up to someone like the four Kumaras, which they're pretty exalted personalities. If they came into the room, we would say, oh, those are just neophytes. I think we'd offer them at least a pillow to sit on. Maybe we'd even let them speak if it was their turn to give class. No, they're quite exalted personalities. And similarly, by the process of pure devotional service, we're supposed to rise from the platform of being distressed to wanting material facility, to becoming inquisitive, to actually becoming interested, developing our interest in becoming Krishna conscious. After liberation, one actually gets a taste for, one actually understands more directly what Krishna consciousness is and actually develops the desire to obtain it. Now, it may be somewhat intellectual and it may be sometimes experience. But when one steadily experiences Krishna consciousness, one becomes ever more interested in obtaining it. So here it mentions about rules, karma, because we're in the place called karma. So especially it's valuable for the neophyte devotee who as simultaneously wants to develop an interest in Krishna consciousness and is conflicted by material desires. Generally, the materialists are not conflicted because just like a lion, if a lion jumps on a lamb and eats it, it doesn't start feeling guilty. I heard I should be a vegetarian. Eating meat is not very healthy. I'm sure the mother of this lamb will be very upset. Sorry, I'm committing so many offenses. But, you know, I've just had a bad mother. That's what she taught me. No, the lion doesn't feel conflicted at all. If you start criticizing the lion, he'll probably eat you too. He has no confliction in his mind whatsoever. And for ordinary materialists, they're also not conflicted. If they break the four ugly principles, the more they do it, the more they're proud of it. They brag about how many drinks they had last night. And the devotees, if they do something wrong, they feel guilty, which means that they're almost human beings. Animals, they don't feel any guilt whatsoever. But those who have some conscience coming from the super soul, if they do something wrong, they actually regret it. An ordinary materialist doesn't generally regret it. They have to do something extremely out of their nature. And then after a while, they just becomes normalized for them too. If they kill enough people, then it becomes just normal, you know. At first, they may just like, if they drink alcohol, at first they don't like the taste, but then they get used to it. And then they actually become attracted to it. So, as one is trying to elevate oneself in consciousness, then there has to be some kind of duty so that gradually one will lose the taste for sense gratification and develop a higher taste, at least a higher quality in the mode of nature. So therefore, karma yoga is especially meant for those who are either in distress or they're hankering for something, material comfort. Because the tendency for people who are in the material world conflicted by hankering, lamentation, is that's what they'll follow. And someone who's following that will get themselves into trouble. Therefore, sense gratification at first, as it says, has to be regulated at least. So prescribed duties for the Shudras and the Vaishyas especially regulate sense gratification. Of course, for the others, the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, it's also regulated, but especially Karma Yoga is applicable to the Vaishyas and the Shudras so that they don't get into too much lamentation and they don't get into too much hankering. The kind and quality of sense gratification that they're allowed is restricted. And therefore the amount of lamentation they have will be restricted and the amount of hankering they have will also be restricted. Nowadays the Vaishyas, so-called Vaishyas, who are actually Naradamas, and the so-called Shudras, who are actually Mudhas, there's no restriction for their sense gratification. Therefore they can do anything for so-called economic development. Especially they wind up killing cows and other animals. And they enjoy unrestricted sense gratification. And therefore they're bound to go to the lower species of life. But these things are restricted. Shudras are not allowed, even if they are able to enjoy a certain amount of sense gratification, it's quite restricted. And Vaishyas, it's even more restricted. And the Kshatriyas, it's even still more restricted if they want to keep their intelligence and have the power to protect the society and organize sacrifice. It requires a great deal of restraint of the senses and the mind. And for the Brahmins, they're completely restrained in the senses and mind. Otherwise, they can't have the power of chanting mantras or the power of intelligence to see things properly. So this is the same thing goes for the devotees who are not pure devotees. They have to follow the rules and regulations according to their nature, which generally means that they follow the four of the principles. And that's the sense and mind restraint, and then they positively engage in devotional service, especially by chanting Hare Krishna, and they engage in their duties according to their nature. If they're intelligent, they can preach. If they're a little less intelligent, they can organize. If they're a little less intelligent, they can acquire assets to be utilized for the Sankirtan mission. Therefore, everyone according to their nature can engage in the Sankirtan mission, but the whole idea is to serve Krishna. And if the whole idea is to serve Krishna, then by doing that, one becomes Krishna conscious, no matter what duty one is performing. So it doesn't really matter the duty that we have, simply the acceptation of utilizing things according to Krishna's desire, according to his representative's instructions, to please Krishna, brings one to Krishna consciousness, no matter what duty one is performing. The only difficulty is, as Krishna points out, is that when one imitates someone else's duty, thinking that someone else's duty, someone else's position will actually be more enjoyable or more beneficial, whatever else. In other words, some false conception that there's some higher and lower duties that will make my Krishna, that will increase or decrease my happiness in the material world, or even my Krishna consciousness. In other words, if one imitates someone on a higher platform of consciousness, then one is sure to become degraded. Because not only one will neglect one's own duty, which is an aid to controlling one's own mind and senses, but one takes up another duty, which makes it impossible for them to control their mind and senses. Instead, one becomes deluded, as we can see the Prakriti Sahajiyas, who take lightly the rules and regulations meant for controlling the mind and senses, and they imagine that they're on the highest platform of spiritual realization just by their imagination. Although they don't take to the process to actually experience Krishna by trying to please him, by following by serving his mission, instead, they neglect his mission and they imagine that they become personal associates of Krishna just by their own will, power, as if Krishna has nothing to do with it. In any case, such persons, then they wind up taking the rules and regulations of devotional service quite lightly, because they take everything quite lightly. And therefore, they imagine that not only they're personally associating with Krishna in the rasa dance in some other imaginary form that they imagine themselves to be, but then they generally imagine also that they could enjoy the rasa dance with so many gopis, so many imaginary gopis on this planet. And therefore we find that they're generally smoking bidis and doing all kinds of things and think that they're exalted personalities. But Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī and his followers, they showed us that the most exalted devotees, they're the most restrained and simple in their activities and the most humble. And they never declare themselves exalted devotees. They simply declare themselves to be the servants of exalted devotees. And they have a taste of hearing and chanting about Krishna and following the principles and trying to spread Krishna consciousness. And others who are not in such a position, we find in the Veda culture, that they serve the higher classes by following their instructions. They don't try to act like Babaji's and then keep 36 women. No, they take up, at least in the Veda culture, they gradually, or they take up the process of devotional service according to their ability to follow it and not try to imitate those who are on a higher level. And those who are on a higher level, they don't try to unnecessarily disturb people's minds by taking advantage of their position and trying to enjoy material energy in the name of being on a higher status of life. The higher the status of life, the more simple the living is supposed to be, and the more simple living there is, then the more humble one is supposed to become. In any case, the Hare Krishna movement is meant for everyone living as simply as possible and at the same time maximizing the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Then people will not become envious and people can cooperate if everyone has the same mission. And then everyone can be satisfied no matter what our service is, that they feel they're actually contributing to the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Then everyone will be happy, the fact when Krishna is happy. That when Krishna's people are getting the opportunity to understand Krishna, and revive their relation with Krishna, that's the actual, supposed to be the result of the Hare Krishna movement, is give as many people as possible the opportunity to understand their relation with Krishna. So the gain is Krishna's gain, not that anyone's going to gain followers or wealth or prestige or anything like that. The only thing one can gain in this movement, ultimately, is Krishna. And if we don't gain Krishna, we haven't really gotten the real benefit of this movement. And if we get Krishna, it doesn't matter what else we got. If we get Krishna, we've gotten everything. We don't need anything else. So I'll stop there. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. In our society, what is the role of sannyasis and what are the qualifications for sannyasis? Because apparently one can do all the preaching and services also without taking sannyas, but also we see Srila Prabhupada did give sannyas to many devotees. So what's the proper understanding for us?
Well, Sannyasa is part of the Varna and Ashram system, and it's more or less supposed to be given to those who are simply interested in preaching. They have no other business but to preach Krishna conscious message, and they've gone through at least the process of, as Krishna says, abhayam sattva samshudira jnana yoga vivastiti danam dhammas yagnascha svariyatapa arjava. So I've understood that they're eternal servants of Krishna. They have gone through the processes, or they qualify with the process of sacrifice and charity and sense of mind control. They're detached, they're engaged in tapasya, they're fearless, they have spiritual realizations, and they're pure in their existence. And therefore, their only business is to tell people about the science of Krishna consciousness. So that's what sannyasa is meant for.
Could not preach without taking the formal order?
Yeah, I mean, Srub Damodara seemed to do pretty well. He accepted sannyas, but he never accepted it externally. But he did all right. Being the personal assistant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, especially in this age, people don't understand what sannyas is. So it's not so important. But Prabhupada awarded it because someone had to be the leaders of the preaching in this society. And therefore, even unqualified persons he gave sannyas to. But that's not very helpful nowadays. Otherwise, it becomes a bodily concept, which actually acts as an impediment for spiritual advancement. One becomes too much interested in becoming a sannyasi rather than servant of the servant of Krishna, then it's useless. Any service taken up without the attitude of service to Guru and Krishna is just a waste of time. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.